All right, May 24, 2024. That's a 5, a 24, and a 24, and a 20. How about that? So here we are, Common Sense Ohio, trying to make sense of the numbers as usual, coming at you week in and week out with your dose of common sense, with a sort of an Ohio-centric launching pad towards news of the world, brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting. Harper Plus Accounting's been doing my books. Glenn and his crew have been doing my books for my business and my personal for, I don't know, the better part of almost 30 years now. So
wow, that's a relationship.
That my dad always said, find a good doctor, find a good accountant, find a good lawyer. I have, so yeah. you find your professional crew and right. they'll be with you forever.
And find a good plumber.
I have a great plumber. Yeah. I have a good electrician. Right. There's people you...
that you can call at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's right.
You're exactly right. And I am that guy for other people, so it's not. I'm not just being selfish. But, every week we do a little bit of a World War II lesson, and I think I'm going to do both today. It's Memorial Day, so I want to talk a little bit about Memorial Day. But first we'll do a quick little World War II history lesson, because it sort of throws back to my childhood. As a kid, we had a TRS-80 computer back wow. in my dad's den.
Yeah. Texas Instruments?
It was Radio Shack. It was
Radio
Tandy.
Radio Shack.
Yeah,
okay.
It was a Tandy TRS-80. But I think it was Tandy. Anyway, they had games that you would load with literally cassettes. And this is before floppy disks. And one of the games was called Sink the Bismarck. And the Bismarck was a battleship, a German battleship. And
yeah.
And on May 24 in 1940, let's make sure I get the year right here. I should get it right. 41. I couldn't remember if it's 41 or 40. Anyway, so what happens is Germany commissions two Bismarck-class battleships, and this thing was a behemoth. It was a monster, and it was sort of like the unsinkable German battleship. And I remember as a kid, all the British ships chasing down the Bismarck to
yeah.
sink it. As,
yeah.
Named
after Otto von Bismarck.
Named after Otto von Bismarck.
Who was the guy in German history who brought all those little fiefdoms all together into a central government.
Yeah, so, they
big were, deal in German history.
A little throwback to German history.
Yeah.
So they, I didn't know this. I read today that the Bismarck really was only like a two-week, had only like an 8 to 10 day stint before it was
yeah.
sunk.
Yeah.
It was, they sent it out to go sink convoys and attack convoys. But
well, it famously sank the British, the HMS Hood.
Yes.
And like
in the
only
Battle of Denmark.
Only like two or four people survived the Hood.
And it became the mission. I mean, literally the almost obsessive mission of the British. And that was the Hood was the British flagship. You know,
it'd
that
be
was
like sinking the USS like Enterprise or something.
Yeah, I mean, it was their
flagship.
It was their sort of the crown of the crown.
Yeah.
And so it became the British mission to go chase down and sink the Bismarck, which they did.
Which they
I
did.
Think somewhere around May 27, 8. But the battle started on the 24th. So.
And the story is really interesting.
It's an interesting story. I mean,
if you want to embellish, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, so this is sort of unbelievable. So the British on their aircraft carriers had this antique plane called a Swordfish. And it was a biplane, like World War One. It was not even a monoplane. It was a biplane, and it was a torpedo bomber on the British aircraft carrier. So I think it was the Ark Royal that launched its Swordfishes.
These
planes at the Bismarck. And the first round, I think they missed every single plane, even going so slow with the Bismarck firing all their ack at the Swordfish, and it's just going right through the fabric and the wires because these are just like antiques. And I think they completely missed. And then they launched them a second time, and only one plane hit the Bismarck out of the whole squadron.
Yeah, and I think they disabled its steering, its rudder, or
that's
something
right.
like that. Yeah.
That's exactly right. So yeah. The Bismarck couldn't go any. All it could do was go in circles.
Right, it was a sitting duck.
So. They took it out.
Yeah, they took it out with torpedoes and whatever else and a couple
battleships from a distance. Yeah.
And it sunk. They rescued some of the British. Then go on to rescue some of the German soldiers from the water, but then the U-boats showed up, so they had to leave, and everybody else is presumed to be dead. Yeah. Maybe a few other got rescued. So,
some really great books out there for people that want to read them.
Yeah, Sink the Bismarck.
Yeah, and good movies, too.
Yeah, that's...
It's thoroughly covered. And was it Bob Ballard, you know, the guy that found the Titanic? I think he did a whole thing on the Bismarck.
Yeah, I saw a picture of it under the wreckage recently.
They found it, yeah.
Interesting. So then we get to Memorial Day. So Memorial Day is Monday, and it's now the last Monday of every May. But it wasn't always that way. It started as Decoration Day.
Oh.
Because it just became a practice right after the Civil War for folks to put flowers on graves of their fallen loved ones, mostly at that point from the Civil War. And it was North, South, Black, White. It didn't matter. It just became a common practice. And then there was an order. I didn't know any of this. There was something called the Grand Army of the Republic, which is a politically powerful organization of Union veterans led by Major General John A. Logan, issues Order Number 11, the Memorial Day Act, sort of enshrining Memorial Day instead of Decoration Day. And he wanted to do it on May 30. So for the longest time, it was May 30. And he said that was essentially because by May 30, all the flowers across the land will have bloomed. You know, there'll be flowers for everybody to put on the graves of their loved ones.
Okay.
And then eventually we decided, well, this is not only a memorial type day, but a day of rest that we've established in our country. So it just became a Monday holiday and became the last Monday.
That's super interesting.
So sort of an interesting story behind all these holidays. But, you know, hopefully we haven't gotten rid of that one yet, and hopefully we won't. But for those of you out there enjoying your freedom, enjoying your right to go shut down public schools and protest and scream and shout and burn the American flag and do all these horrible things, why don't you take a second to remember the folks who died so you would have those rights?
Right.
Interesting irony, isn't it?
Yes. It is a Memorial Day.
Standing on the shoulders of dead giants and taking a piss down.
In honor of the fallen. It's not Veterans Day or Flag Day or President's Day. It's actually a day to remember the fallen, the people who gave, you know, the ultimate measure.
Yep.
And sacrificed their lives for their fellow service personnel and for the country. And so tonight, what I'm doing, Steve, to memorialize their sacrifices, I'm going to go to an event in Millersport and encourage anybody who may catch this later on today when this gets published. But we should remember Lima Company, which was a reserve unit based here in Columbus out of Rickenbacker. 23 Marines and Navy personnel died in 2005. Many of them from Ohio, probably around half, and the other half from all over the rest of the country. And there's a display that's going to be erected over the weekend at the Millersport Fairgrounds. So I'm going to join a bunch of other bikers, and we're going to escort the R&L Carrier Truck Company that donates sending this exhibit all over the country, even to Alaska. We're going to go from Reynoldsburg to Millersport with that exhibit. So it's going to be really cool.
That sounds cool. Our good friend Jared used to do a motorcycle ride up to the Fallen Heroes Memorial and Fallen Heroes Memorial in Sunbury.
That's a great, great thing that he did when he owned 62 Barbecue.
Yep.
So that was awesome, and that was a great ride. And the police and the fire department, Franklin County Sheriff's. They used to come out and they would literally shut down the roads so that we could go honor the veterans and those who gave their lives at the memorial for, I think they called it the War on Terror up there in Sunbury.
And there, I'll do this without emotion if I can. Sean Tehanan, who used to work, good friend of mine, used to work for me in the office upstairs. He was an attorney. And anybody who has driven down south in Grove City, there's this Sean Tehanan Memorial Highway. He was killed in Afghanistan, I think April 4, 2012. He's recognized.
Was he a judge advocate?
He was a master sergeant.
Master sergeant? And, even though he was an attorney?
Yep. He was just a master. He was in the guard. Master sergeant was deployed a couple times and was in Afghanistan. and was killed by a suicide bomber along with several others. But, you know, hats off to everybody. And, you know, remember your loved ones and remember the ones who gave all.
Right.
So anyway, with that, we will, we got a lot going on. Let's plow through it.
We sure did. So we talked a little bit, we'll just dispatch a story pretty quick, but we talked a little bit about all of the criticism that this kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, Harrison Butker, got because he spoke at a religious college and gave a religious commencement address. And the Kansas City newspaper has called for his replacement by a female soccer player who she didn't even ask for the job, but they nominated her to replace him because he said that men and women, if they are so inclined, he encouraged them to explore traditional family roles.
But he also says at the same time, go and have a career if that's what you want to do.
Exactly. Right.
It's just so stupid.
It's so stupid. But Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes and even Bill Maher, the liberal.
I was just going to say, Bill Maher came out on his side.
They came out and defended the guy and basically said, listen, that's his opinion. What the hell's wrong with America? You can't have an opinion.
Right. You got to get canceled because you want to have a traditional family household that incidentally built this freaking country.
So I think you'll like this next story, Steve. So Steve's a defense attorney, which is an essential role in our constitutional system.
You always have to defend it. You always say that. Then you always give me the footnote. I appreciate it.
Because
it's also just a job.
Because people just, like my dad was a defense attorney and a judge, and people would always get mad. How can you, the whole role. Anyway, Governor Pritzker in Illinois is pushing this bill. I think it's a bill. Maybe it'll just be a policy. But he's pushing this proposal to redefine in Illinois penal code the word offender justice impacted individual. And of course, Illinois is currently bankrupt. And just from a practical point of view, not to mention how stupid that is, but from a practical point of view, it's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars every time they change a word.
It's so stupid.
Come on.
Look,
man.
You're a convicted criminal. It's fine. It's okay. You can still be redeemed.
Exactly.
And the system didn't make you commit a crime. You know, it's such nonsense. And
justice, look,
I defend it is all these things are, you know, it
Orwellian.
Is true. It is true that some people grew up less privileged than others. It is true that if you grew up less privileged, maybe you're more likely to commit a crime, and that sucks.
Right.
But there's still got to be responsibility, and you still got to get through it. And there's plenty. It's not fair to everybody else who grew up with less privilege who did not commit crimes. Right.
Right.
You know, and
not everybody who commits horrible crimes was economically.
No, that's right. I've got plenty of folks who had plenty of money and grew up. In fact, a lot of times
Hunter
it's the opposite.
Biden. Ted Bundy?
A lot of times it's the opposite. So look, I judge nobody.
Right.
I judge nobody. I help people that come into my office and want me to represent them in court. I do the best I can for them. I don't care where you came from or what you do. I don't care what your political bent is. I don't care what your social bent is. If you want a lawyer, I will represent you in almost every type of case. I am indiscriminate about that.
Yes. A vigorous defense is the best way to ensure justice.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, if you're, whether it's terrorism or whether it's anti-terrorism, whether it's, it doesn't make any difference to me. So I represented folks who were accused of crimes out of the riots a few years ago. I represented several. I had no problem doing it. I represented folks who were accused of trying to shut down the riots a few years ago. I had no problem with doing that either. I don't care.
Right.
Because it just, that's my job. But
John Adams defended the British at the Boston Massacre.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because he supported King George III.
But to rewrite these things and redefine these terms is a dangerous, slippery slope because you can't erase history by just changing the names and changing the definitions. But you can start to influence the future. And you know, if you're telling people that it's not their fault that they went and committed crimes, you're giving people an excuse to commit crimes. And, you know, eventually that catches fire, and it's not, and I do mean fire because it's dangerous stuff. So.
Well, it's part of this woke trend, like redefining illegal aliens as undocumented new arrivals.
Right.
What the hell's that about? You know, just, if they are what they are, it's a felony.
Of Orwellian 1984 terminology, like we're the Ministry of Truth when they are really just propagandists. You know, it's Pravda all over again.
Well, another criminal related thing, I find this really fascinating, Steve, and I'm sure for some of your clients, they're hoping that it gets affirmed by the Supreme Court if it goes that way. But the Ninth Circuit this week ruled, a panel of the Ninth Circuit ruled that nonviolent felons do not lose their Second Amendment rights.
Yeah.
And this is coming out of the Bruin decision.
Yep.
That you look back historically at what the traditions were at the time of the Founding Fathers, and at most, a nonviolent felon, it would be a misdemeanor kind of thing, involving guns. And they could find no contemporary analogy that a nonviolent felon should lose their right to keep and bear arms.
Yeah, so the Bruin decision basically this goes back to the Heller decision, D.C. versus Heller, and then you had Bruin, and then you had there's a New York case or another case in between that applies it to the states. But anyway, what they're talking about is a disability, and there are lots of disabilities, and I don't mean like physical disabilities. I mean a legal disability that would prevent you from possessing firearms. One of the classics in our country for my entire professional career has been if you are a convicted felon, there are certain felonies, not all, but certain felonies that preclude you from owning or possessing a firearm. And if you do and you get caught, you get charged with a crime called having a weapon under disability here in Ohio. Now, generally speaking, the felony cutoff under federal law, there's a nuance to it I'm not going to dig into, but if something required a year and a day, so anything more than a year statutorily would be a disqualifying felon or felony. I have been raising this issue. So, for instance, if you are charged with, it's a little bit different, but I'll bring it up anyway. If you're charged with drinking and driving here in Ohio and you've got you're either licensed from the former license permit standards, or you just employ constitutional carry, which is sort of a misnomer, but you carry a gun because you can, and you get pulled over for OVI and it happens to be in your center console of your car or the glove box of your car, has nothing to do with the case, you're going to be charged with a felony. You're going to be charged with a felony possession of a firearm. And I raised this issue under the Bruin decision all the time, that is an unlawful, unconstitutional, violative of the Second Amendment burden on your right to bear arms. Because really, it has nothing to do with it. Just because you happen to be an OVI or DUI doesn't mean that you check your constitutional rights at the door to defend yourself.
Yeah.
Now, I think to be fair about the legal analysis, it's a different story if you're using it or doing something with it while intoxicated.
Yeah.
That may be a little different story.
Or you're a bank robber and use a gun.
Sure, that's obviously different. Yeah. But this, what we're talking about here is a disability. So if you've got a prior nonviolent felony, and what would that be? Theft.
Yeah.
Maybe a fraud.
Tax evasion?
Tax evasion.
Possibly.
Maybe even certain narcotics possession cases. Right. See,
embezzlement.
Back to definitions.
Yeah.
You have to define. There are certain drug possession crimes that are, by definition, crimes of violence, just because they say so.
Okay.
There are if it's trafficking, typically that's going to fall into a crime of violence. If it's possession, sometimes not. Okay. So it's really about how you defend those things. So nonviolent offenses aren't our normal, aren't necessarily people engaged in what we would sort of use common words to mean nonviolent offenses.
Yeah.
And vice versa. It's what the law says they are. So there's always a definitional section. You remember from law school, you go to the front of the code and there's usually definitions.
Yeah.
One of them is crime of violence and it's got a bunch of crimes listed. But there really isn't any reason to, in my opinion, to exclude firearm possession just because you've got a nonviolent felony. And I think...
I don't know if you read the...
I've not read it.
Yes.
I'm familiar with the litigation.
But what you would like about this case, what makes this decision pretty strong, is the convict in this particular case had 5 felony priors.
Mm-hmm.
And she still ruled, the person who wrote the opinion still ruled that, it doesn't have anything to do with a felony, actually. It's just that this is enumerated in the Constitution.
Correct.
As a right.
So
she's like, hey, it's a right. We can't
you
really.
You have a constitutional right. And under the Bruin decision, the new and analytical approach for the court on Second Amendment issues, and I suspect going forward some other constitutional issues, is what is the history, text, and tradition of our Constitution say about these crimes? And what they're looking for is, historically, did nonviolent felons get stripped of their constitutional right to bear arms? And apparently this judge says no.
Apparently not.
And I filed a motion to dismiss a case, in like my OVI case, same thing. I said, look, if you're really telling me that just because somebody was intoxicated, they weren't allowed to have a gun in the history of our country, you're insane, because everybody lining up across from the Redcoats was probably drunk. You know, it's so it's
liquid courage,
a little liquid courage. So at any rate, that's,
I think that's fascinating. Again, another crime story, and this one blows me away. It all this kind of, embezzlement, stories blow me away, but, cause you wonder, like, where are the auditors in these situations? So just this week, I believe, Franklin County or City of Columbus, or maybe it was Dublin, but somebody indicted the purchasing manager at the Columbus Zoo, who embezzled over the course of their career $2.3 million.
Yeah, this case has been cooking for a long time. Wow. So a bunch of guys got indicted up in Delaware County. The attorney general came in and handled that case.
Oh, it was Delaware. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's where the zoo is. So it's So there was a bunch of guys indicted for all sorts of things, and it goes... Basically, the allegation is they were abusing their position of power and trust at the zoo and buying things for their own benefit.
Yeah, and that's taxpayer money. So you're just like, where's the auditing?
Yeah. So, and it, you know, there's a, that story broke a couple of years ago. It's, wow. And I think it's sort of finally coming to a head. People are finally pleading guilty and it's in they're finalizing it.
Yeah. What wasn't a previous director of the zoo is serving some time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it went all the way to the top. Little bit about Ohio. There's a constitutional amendment that's percolating. My understanding is they're still seeking the requisite number of signatures, but it's and Brett was all over this story. Who's missing today? He's on vacation, hoping he and the family having a good time. But Brett brought this to the table about the constitutional amendment to increase the minimum wage in Ohio to $15 an hour over a period of time. And having just had breakfast,
they're going to make this a constitutional amendment.
Yes,
that to change the minimum wage to a certain number
because the legislature.
I can't even. This is so.
It was abortion last year, and then what was the other one?
The Ohio Constitution is not a statute.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make it $15 an hour, what happens when it needs to go up?
Recreational pot. That was the other one.
Yeah. These are statutory issues, not look. At least,
but pot, let me just. Can I get to the sweet spot?
I'll let you.
So, talking to the wait staff at the restaurant this morning, they informed me like they're total. So, you would think like $15 an hour, like people who have blue collar jobs that are working their ass off for a living, that they'd be like, yeah, we want. They're like, well, no, because if we only got $15 an hour, like I'd go get a factory job or Amazon or something because. I'm making way more than that off of tips.
It shows you how meaningless these things are in the market economy. And Thomas Sowell does a great job of sort of breaking this down, because what happens is the minimum wage has been largely in our adult lives irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because the market was bearing more than the minimum wage.
Yeah.
At $3.35, like, so the entry level people, maybe when I was 16 years old, I was getting $3.35 an hour.
Right.
As minimum wage, but that quickly went up to like $7.50 an hour when I started doing, you know, long summer jobs, banging nails, or doing whatever. The danger of the minimum wage is that it precludes entry level positions, or it keeps from the market the young people who need the experience to enter into the workplace. So, and this has an adverse impact, by the way, on the lower class, and specifically. If you want to get racial about it, the poor of both black and white are precluded from entry level jobs. Now you would say why? Well, like upstairs in my law practice, if I have to pay somebody too much money, I'm not going to hire the law clerk.
Yeah,
I'm going to hire another lawyer.
Yeah,
because it's not worth it to me. If I hire a law clerk who has zero experience doing anything and it costs me too much money, It's not that I'm just going to suck it up and pay that person.
Right.
It's going to be that I'm not going to pay that person.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
And why? Well, because I can't afford it.
Right.
I can't afford it. I don't get some, there's not a fair bargain for my dollar. And when you do this, it has exponential ripple effects. The first effect is you don't hire the entry level person.
Right.
So that person, black or white, doesn't have the experience like I did working for a lawyer to basically sweep the floors.
Yeah.
So I was, and my first job on a construction site was a gopher.
Yeah.
And if I wouldn't have gotten that experience, I wouldn't have been able to learn how to use the saw.
Right.
And if I didn't get that experience, I wouldn't have been the helper throwing boards up to the guy doing the rafters. And if I wouldn't have had that right. experience, I would never become the guy doing the rafters, and I would never become the guy supervising the crew. I would never become the guy building my own house. You know, it's
right.
like
right.
I had, because of that entry level job, I was able to sort of advance in the working world.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody says how many people are below the poverty line, et cetera. And there are, but you know what? That number, it's not the same people that know it changes.
That's
so
right.
I was below the poverty line. You were below the poverty
for
line.
Sure.
Everybody who started their first job in high school was below the poverty line.
Cutting grass.
But we quickly advanced.
Raking leaves, you know.
But yeah. we advanced because the employers were able to hire us at a wage that made sense for them to hire us.
Well, and a lot of times, as you say, you have to prove yourself. So they bring you in at some low, you know, minimum wage number, and then they watch you. You know, like a sharp employer will say, sweep the floor. And then he or she will note how thorough and how conscientious you swept the floor. And if you did real good at that, they'd say, well, maybe you're worth a couple bucks more an hour, and we'll have you stock the shelves and put, you know, all the green beans and the corn and the peach cans, everything in the right order, and you'll be conscientious at that. Oh, and you're pretty good at that. Well, now I'm going to make you in charge of the produce department here at my little grocery store.
But if
this is how you move
up.
If
it would have cost you too much for the initial floor sweeping,
you're not going to hire the guy.
You're not going to hire the guy. You're just going to have somebody else already do it. You're going to do it yourself.
Right.
That's what I do.
Or contract it out, or get a robot.
Yep.
Because there are robots that clean floors now. You don't have to hire a human being.
Right. So
and that's what Wendy's is doing.
What we're doing is depriving young folks of the opportunity to enter the workforce and advance beyond the poverty line.
Right, improve their competence.
All for the goal of paying people more. And I had people in here debating one time, and they were all over this. And I said, look, I can't afford to pay 20 bucks an hour to a law clerk. And their solution was, I take home less.
No.
I'm like, well, look, I still can't pay that much.
And frankly, the law clerk needs to be paying you because you're actually giving him or her an education.
Well, sure. So, and there's
it
that.
It works both ways.
Anybody who has run a business and had to hire somebody, or even anybody who has managed others, understand that for the first X period of time, and it probably depends on what you're doing.
Yeah, you're training.
There's a training phase.
That's right.
And I'm not going to devote the time to pay somebody $15 an hour during that training phase because I can't afford it.
No.
Now I would pay somebody $8 an hour or 10 or it's whatever the market would bear.
That's right.
And if you advance minimum wage beyond what the market would bear, you're not going to get people paid more. You're going to have more people unemployed.
And I also think it's a disincentive for people maybe who are on the bubble. Should I get my GED? Should I not? Oh, I just get paid the same whether I get it or not. So it's almost like a stupefying kind of thing where you're holding people back from achievement.
Yes.
I mean, it's anti-capitalist in every sense of
it is anti-capitalist in every sense, right? It absolutely is, because the market will tell us what the wage should be. And all you need, if you need proof of that, all you need do is look back for over the last 40 years of my, you know, I guess what it'd be 35 years of my working life.
Right.
The money that I made almost always exceeded the minimum wage. And you would say, well, how is that possible? Well, because the market bared more, you know, the market demanded that employers pay me more if I worked hard.
Right. So switching a little bit here to sales tax, this is nothing can be more regressive to people that are economically, you know, really stretched.
Yeah, there's more disparity in sales tax than any other type of tax.
You know, like if a rich guy goes and puts 30 gallons of gas in his Mercedes and a poor guy goes and puts 30 gallons of gas in his beat up F-150, they both pay the same amount of tax, but one guy's wealthy and the other guy's struggling. So that's what we mean by regressive. And COTA, Central Ohio Transit Authority, which is the transit authority for Columbus, you know, and there's one up in Cleveland, there's one in Cincinnati, there's something like 40 transit agencies in Ohio of different sizes, different cities. But COTA currently has a half of cent, one half of a penny sales tax in Franklin County and in their broader service areas. And they have passed a resolution, the board, to increase that by another half of a penny. So COTA would go from half of a percent of taxable sales to now getting a full 1%. And I'm just going to say this. I mean, as a kid, I remember Ohio's and the local sales tax where I grew up was like maybe 2.5%. It's now up to almost 10% in a lot of counties.
That's insane.
And that's crazy.
See these videos.
And it's so regressive. This is really going to hurt poor people.
Right. No,
most especially.
It's lunacy. You see these videos like these. I saw, I don't know where I saw it, a TikTok video of like some young gal finally realizing all the tax implications of our world.
And she was crying. I saw that.
So it's like, wait a minute. I earned the money and I paid income tax, right? And then I give it to you and then you paid tax on it. And then you bought something with it. And then you pay tax again with it. And the person who, the money you gave it to, they paid income tax on it.
Right.
And it just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes.
I'll talk to a young person that just bought like a house and they're like, well, I paid for the house, but why every, like twice a year do I have to keep paying like this massive tax to keep my house.
Right, just to have a house.
And I'm like, yeah, welcome welcome to the real world.
Right, it's lunacy.
Mr. Student Loan Forgiveness Dude.
Yeah.
You know, you talk to these young people like, well, this is wrong. Well, no shit. What do you think dad's been saying all these years?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
so just to own my building here, it costs me $20,000 a year.
See, that's crazy.
It's lunacy.
That's lunacy.
Right.
And, you know, the thing COTA said that they want to spend the money on is for more trails, bike trails, more parks, and rapid routing,
Rapid routing? What is that?
I think what they're thinking is, in the old model, that they're going to run people, say, from Westerville to the central city and then back in the evening. I got news for them.
Nobody's doing that.
No. People are telecommuting. Yeah. They're working out of their homes now.
This is them trying to justify their own existence because nobody's riding the bus.
Bingo. So Biden, there's this thing about Biden being on the Ohio ballot, and it's all driven because Ohio law dictates a certain date by which the Republican and the Democrat winner of their primary has to be given to the Secretary of State so that ballots can get printed. This is in the old days when they printed ballots, and they still do when they mail them out. But now it's electronic. But it's a remnant of the old days when they needed enough time to print paper ballots. And the DNC National Convention is the date for that falls after the Ohio date, which requires you to report, you know, who the winner is. And the legislature just basically, probably because they're pissed off about what went on with other states trying to prevent Trump to be on their ballots, they're like in no hurry to fix this for Biden. But Governor DeWine, I will say to his credit, this is bullshit. Biden should be on the ballot. Let the people decide whether it's Trump or Biden. I said that about Trump. I'll say it about Biden. And I think DeWine is right. This needs to
He's
be.
He's absolutely right.
It needs to be fixed.
Biden is the Democratic candidate, and he needs to be on the ballot in Ohio. Get him on the ballot in Ohio and vote against him. Right?
Exactly.
That's how I look
I don't
at
want
it.
Our state to play the games that Colorado and Maine.
No
and,
state should play that game.
That was
look,
crap.
A fair election is all anybody want. Anybody should want is a complete fair election.
Exactly. So kudos to DeWine. I hope he gets it done. We don't need to be embarrassed. And I want our state to play fair. I don't want to be like the other ones. Steve, what do you think about this $310 million East Palestine settlement with the government? I've heard that Norfolk Southern has paid with this settlement added into it. It will be a total of about $1 billion in claims that they've paid out. Does it seem proportional to you, or what do you think?
I don't know. I confess my ignorance here. I have not actually done the deep dive into this to see what the claims are.
Yeah.
But it sounds like a whole heck of a lot of money.
It does, doesn't
it? You know, so, yeah. And what you wonder here. So here's what you need to know. Typically, as sort of a big picture matter, it's not coming out of their pocket. They've clearly got insurance coverage. And so it's coming out of our pockets in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because
right.
Anybody who has experienced an uptick in their auto insurance rates understands this concept, right?
Oh my God. No
because, you know, the Kia is getting stolen and all these cars and giving away property and all the property damage caused by all the riots. Like eventually it adds up, folks. And yes, the insurance companies do not have bottomless pockets.
Yeah.
There's a finite sum. Yeah. And when the coffers get depleted too far, they raise your rates.
Yeah.
It's just how it goes. So when you're destroying stuff and saying no big deal, insurance will cover it.
Right.
There's a cost.
You're actually in a pool of other insured people and you're sharing those costs.
And you're sharing those costs. And look, like it or not, my libertarian bent always irks a little bit about this, but you have to buy insurance. Like we have to buy car insurance.
Right,
it's a law.
Right.
So we have to buy it and it's going up because of reckless government policy permitting destruction of property.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. And if you have multiple cars, let's suppose you're a bachelor and you have, I don't know, five or six cars, you can only drive one at a time, but you're paying for like five times, six times.
I've got a fleet. Cause I've got a wife, I've got a kid, I got two boys and I got a wife and I got a truck and a camper and a couple other things. And you know, it's like the insurance bill is getting to the point where I am contemplating getting rid of a lot of my cars.
Yeah, right. I think a lot of
and,
people.
And, you know, boo-hoo, you would say for me, these are first world problems. Of course they are. But it's like, you know, it's one less thing in the economy, one less dollar I'm going to spend because of bad policy. I've got to back off.
So I don't know. I almost need to call my agent. But I have talked to other people that say what they'll do. I mean, this is unreal. Like they have a winter car and maybe a summer sports car. And what they'll do is, like, they'll just take the insurance off of a car for so many months and then put it back on. And apparently certain agencies, certain insurers will do that.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
Yep, you can do that.
That's
so,
a strategy.
I mean, look, so back to East Palestine, that sounds like a huge settlement. I can only hope that those who had a loss were compensated.
You know, like Ohio's tobacco settlement with the tobacco companies, the interesting part about that is, like, the victims didn't get the money. It went to programs. It went to the general budget. Yeah. It did not, you know, it's not like if your dad died of emphysema traced back to lung cancer or something. It's not like the governor, whoever it was at the time, Voinovich or whoever it was, it wasn't like you got a check from the government. Hey, we settled with R.J. Reynolds.
Well, anybody who's ever gotten these things, almost everybody that's lived an adult life gets something in the mail, like a little card or something that says you can either opt in or opt out to some sort of class action. Maybe your bank is settling something or maybe a car that you owned years ago had something wrong. And if you say opt in, you have to opt out. If you don't do anything, I think you're opted in or whatever the notice would be.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's happened is the class action attorneys have spent a crap load of money identifying all the people in the class and a crap load of money sending out these notices on TV, paper, mail, email, TikTok, whatever they're using these days. And a lot of the money goes back to that. So the lawyer's fees and the lawyer's costs get compensated. And then you opt in and you think, all right, I'm part of this class. And then you get a check for $1.50.
Yeah, right.
Or it's like every now and then you get a smaller class, like where each family was paid like $5,000 and they lost everything, you know?
Yeah,
so,
right. So it's a pittance, but
it's a pittance, but it's the idea is you want to sting the corporation from doing it again.
Interesting. So I love these crime stories. So this special counsel, David Weiss, that was supposed to be investigating Hunter on his taxes and this gun charge, he has finally got the trial scheduled for next month in June. And what this is about is Hunter lying on his ATF form 4473, where he checked the little box and said, no, I'm not a drug addict, having written a book in which he describes his drug addiction previously during that same period of time.
Yeah, this is going to be a stretch, though.
So anyway, his attorneys have been unable to postpone the trial, and apparently it's going to happen. But what's really odd about this is that the Supreme Court and the Delaware State Police, now who was a former senator from Delaware that might have been related to Hunter? I don't know. But the Secret Service the Biden family was not a protected family in October of 2018 by the Secret Service. And they have so stated that on the record, the Secret Service. But yet,
that when he dumped the gun, like his girlfriend dumped the gun into like the trash can near the school?
Right, yeah. And then they discovered he had bought this gun. Yeah. So 2 weeks after he bought this gun, the Secret Service shows up at the gun shop. And they want to retrieve that 44.
I remember this, yes.
Right. And yeah. The Secret Service to this day is saying, no, we didn't do that. The FBI and the gun store owner say, oh, yeah, the Secret Service did do that.
Mm-hmm.
So some really
shady stuff.
Stuff is going to come out.
So the issue here is an interesting one. So anybody who's ever bought a gun, you go down to Vance's here in Columbus, Ohio, you go to Cabela's or whatever, and now it's mostly done on the computer. You've got to hit the answer to the questions yes or no. And one of them is, are you addicted to a dangerous drug or something like that?
That's that 4473.
The 4473 form. And if you say yes to that, well, you don't get your gun.
Yeah.
The question is going to be, what does it mean? Like, does it mean you're currently addicted? Does it mean you have ever been addicted? Does it mean that you might become addicted?
Or in treatment or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna prosecute somebody for that, you're really opening the floodgates to prosecute almost everybody. It's a dumb question.
Yeah. Well, he wrote a book and said I was an addict.
He said he was.
Yeah, right.
But he didn't say I am now, right? So there's a defense to this, and I think, look, of all the things Hunter Biden has done, this is a stretch. I think this it's a little flimsy.
Yeah. Well, he certainly doesn't have bad counsel. He has that Abby Lowell guy who's supposed to be like a killer attorney. So.
I don't know him, but I'd represent him on this.
Yeah,
I
mean, good
this
luck.
This would be a fun case.
Yeah, it would be a fun case. We didn't talk about this the last couple shows, but I thought we should because of all of the, you know, Ohio movement into recreational pot, which puts it into an adverse category with the feds, and Biden administration wants to reclassify from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 marijuana. So that, I believe, Steve, will relieve that inconsistency between state and federal law for all the other states that have legalized pot, either for medicinal or for recreational. So I don't know where that stands, but apparently the Food and Drug Administration has taken that up and has issued a notice of proposed rulemaking to change from Schedule 1 to 3.
Yeah, it's sort of a step on the ladder to decriminalize it and then eventually just make it lawful. So I don't know what I think about all this.
Yeah,
I think honestly, what I think is I think pot is marijuana is not yet fully studied. Mm-hmm. I don't think that.
Oh, for sure.
It has had near enough R&D. Research and development to figure out the benefits of it nor the detriments of it.
And part of that is because it was a Schedule 1.
You weren't allowed to.
A university couldn't really research.
They could get a permit to go research hemp.
Yeah.
But not the actual THC. And I think the other thing we have to be mindful of is that the amount of THC is increasing in today's weed.
The potency.
Yeah,
is
the potency. I talked to buddies who have their medical cards, and they go and they have the percentages, and they were telling me about this, and it's like, you know, it's a whole different game than
it's
it was.
A whole different
game. So look, it's going to be regulated. I sort of track libertarian on a lot of this stuff. So
yeah,
criminalizing marijuana or having marijuana unlawful while you're allowing alcohol, is a bit of a inconsistency to me.
It is.
On the other hand, I think when people are saying sort of blanket, marijuana is not bad for you. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Right. Either.
So there's somewhere in the middle, the reasonable minds will lie.
Yeah. Even things that, you know, would otherwise be nutritional. Like I remember a case where some radio show had a contest who could drink the most water, and the lady who won it died from water overdose.
Yeah, you can overdose on water. So
everything can kill you.
There's lots of stuff that can do harm. And look, there are people who abuse marijuana. There is no question about it. And I also think I would disagree for those who would say there are no benefits to marijuana. I think that there are. I know people who have derived benefit from using marijuana.
Right. I mean, people wouldn't be using it, right, Steve, unless they thought they benefited, you know.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that have medical cards who just want to get high.
Well, that
I think there's a lot of people on medical cards who derive a great benefit for pain or for focus or for whatever, or sleep. I have very close friends in legalized states.
Them out as
they take a gummy and they're able to sleep for the first time in their entire lives.
Yeah, right.
So look, I mean,
glaucoma, wasn't there a thing with glaucoma?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Eye pain, you know.
So it's like you can't just crap all over it. Look, we're prescribing Percocets.
Oh, for God's sakes, right.
And opioids.
We
should be prescribing marijuana. I'm just saying, let's learn some stuff about it.
I agree with that 100%. I from what I hear, Schedule 3, it's a class of stuff like testosterone and Viagra. It's not like if you're found with it, you're going to go to prison kind of thing.
Well, Schedule 3 is, I think, you can prescribe. So it's there's a valid use for them.
Yeah.
And on Schedule 1, it's just against the law.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it'd be like LSD or something.
Yes,
it's in the same
LSD,
kind of,
cocaine. Those are those are Schedule 1s.
I think there's some really cool stories out there, and this may seem like a stretch, but there's a scandal within the Columbus School Board about how to subterfuge public participation, and a memo came out where a guy actually wrote up all the ideas that the other board members and himself, what they had in mind, like changing the location of a public meeting just minutes before, like publicly disclosing, oh, it's not really at this middle school. It's at this middle school 20 miles away, you know, kind of thing, so that nobody could come and protest, you know, those kind of games. And at the same time, Congressman Brad Winstrup, who's a Cincinnati U.S. congressman, he heads up the subcommittee on Corona games and, you know, tricks. And he has had Fauci and various people. He this week featured the number two right-hand man for Dr. Tony Fauci, a guy named David Morans. And Morans documented all the ways that he, Fauci, Peter Daszak of the EcoHealth Alliance, this whole group of the Fauci Mafia, were using Gmail and non-government email to delete information that FOIA requests were coming in for. Like, they wanted to know about the financing of the Wuhan virus lab in China. All of these things where it was covered up that it was a lab leak, which we all,
Not only that, you almost got chastised as a xenophobic, lunatic,
right-wing
maniac if you even suggested that it was a lab leak.
Right, that's right. Like, you were out of your mind. You're like, huh, Wuhan, coronavirus, and yet there's a lab there studying.
Gain of function studies.
like, is that really a big stretch? Wow.
No, it leaked out into the market somehow through a monkey.
Yeah, some kind of... Right. Some kind of wombat, or I don't know what it was. But what this is all telling me is that swamps are not only in D.C., but they're in Columbus, they're in Akron, they're in Toledo.
Right, yeah.
Like, you get government officials the right to control your lives in some way, some aspect, whether it's COTA with transit or whether it's the CDC, the National Institutes of Health with Fauci. And these people will bury the real information about their calculations and their decision making so that we, the public, can't even discover this
what
stuff.
What I don't understand, and maybe I'm just stupid and naive and just a hayseed from Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
But why don't we ask all these guys a simple question? How did you get rich?
Yeah, right.
How do you have how are you worth $20 million?
Yeah.
When right. you're a director of health.
Right. How did that happen?
Right. What like how does that happen?
Right.
And you know, I say that sort of facetiously because if you really start to unpeel the layers of how they got rich, you're going to get to the bottom of it.
Right. How did Nancy Pelosi and her husband, are they really that big of a stock picking genius?
And she eventually comes out and says it. No, the Congress, we in the Senate have the ability to insider trade. I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, but basically, that's what she said.
Because we're responsible enough to wield that power efficiently while we get effing rich.
Right. And then she wants if there's going to be an ethical change in the rules, she wants to shut the gate behind her.
Of course.
Oh, well, we could do that, but click. The rest of you guys just getting elected, you can't do that.
You can't do it, right. Right.
Let's see, Steve. The Dow hit 40,000 for the first time this week. But then yesterday took a 1.5% hit. You know, one of my predictions was there was going to be a big correction this year. I may be wrong on that, but I'm feeling like the Fed is not going to lower interest rates because inflation is being very persistent.
And they're pumping more money in. He's still trying to forgive loans. Like, people don't understand. Forgiving loans is pumping money into the economy.
Yeah.
It's the same.
And what that has done, I guess the Fed – or Janet Yellen put out a stat that since Biden, I mean, this is self-incriminating, but since Biden has taken office, the dollar has lost 25% of its value. Like a dollar is, inflation has, I mean, basically that means households all across this country need 25% roughly more than they
and
did
3 years
ago.
It's going to take years to recover from this.
Yeah.
It's going to take years.
Yeah.
So it just is. And no, I agree. I've actually kicked around in my own personal life whether I should be taking money off the table, you know, out of the retirement accounts and maybe stabilizing it in a money market, or do you keep it rocking and rolling? Do you blend it? I think there's going to be a correction. My view on corrections, the older I get, is
they're inevitable.
It's going to happen, I'm going to keep doing my same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think I am too ignorant. But my dad always said this, and now I understand he's right. By the time we decide to make a trade in anticipation of the market, the wolves are already doing the opposite. They've already done what we're trying to do, and now they're in the other direction.
Was it Andy, you know, the old crabby guy on 60 Minutes? He was
Andy Rooney.
He was kind of funny sometimes. He drove me crazy, but he was kind of funny. And I think he did this. I think it was him. He put the Wall Street Journal up on a wall, a dartboard, and he threw, I think he had a monkey actually throw darts at the Wall Street Journal stock page.
And picked his stocks out.
And the monkey did better than the experts that particular week.
Yeah. Now, so I think there are experts, and I think it, but I think it's a little bit more sinister. I think that's the Pelosi phenomenon we're talking about. There are people who are trading on information that we don't have privy to.
Right.
Or that we're not privy to. And, rightfully or wrongfully, but I think that's going on. So by the time that we have it figured out, like if we're going to sit here and say, Norm, you and I, man, we're going to take our money off the table, put it in a money market account or just in a savings account, wait 6 months and pump it back in. We're going to double up.
Or go buy gold,
whatever,
which is kind of moronic.
Yeah, because
it's super high right now.
Right.
Like buying gold at the top is kind of like, what are you doing?
right. And it's,
what are you doing?
So I'm not buying gold. Yeah. So do you just keep it? And then when the market corrects, you just keep on pumping money in?
Yeah.
If you can. I think it's different if you're at retirement age and you've got your nest egg and you're thinking, I need this.
Right.
Maybe it is time. You don't want to lose half your retirement.
No, right.
When you've got no more potential to earn it back.
Yeah. You know, there is a sort of fatalistic kind of attitude about the market because, like you say, well, everybody's in it. Like, if I go down, I'm going down with everybody else. And, like, you know,
it'll come back.
Yeah,
it always does.
It always does.
But are you going to be around? Do you need it before that?
Right. Yeah, like all the big players, when the crash happened in 1929, they were buying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody else is jumping out of windows, and J.P. Morgan's like, hey, those are bargains.
This is bargain basement pricing right now.
Right.
So the real deal then is like if you think the crash is coming,
yeah,
you pull your money back right now, and then when it crashes, you go in and buy with cash.
Yeah,
you know, but you know,
timing, that is.
Yeah. Right. That's everything. And so, yeah. You know, JP Morgan is buying because it had money.
Yeah.
You know, if you lost everything, you can't buy.
You know, a lot of games are being played. You know, both Biden, like, for example, said, well, inflation was at 9% when I walked in the door. And, like, he thinks he solved it. So there's all these stats. And, you know, like you have a saying, Steve, about statistics, that there's lies, damn lies, and whatever it is with statistics. And I'm just reminded that back in 2022, gasoline in Ohio was averaging $5.09 a gallon. And I heard somebody on the radio coming in today saying, hey, it's at $3.50. It's like it's a bargain. And I'm like, yeah, it was like $1.99.
Yeah, we were $2 a gallon.
Yeah, it's like
4 years ago.
So,
and it's only $3.50 because he's depleted half of our strategic oil reserve.
Thank you. Right. Yeah, you see, it's all games.
It's the same thing with money. You know, it's short. This is short-lived.
Yeah.
Right? So what he's done is he's created an influx of surplus that's all false.
Yeah.
It's our reserve that we shouldn't be touching. This is your emergency fund.
Just in time for the election.
Just in time for the election. Yep. You bet. And inflation's not down. The rate that it's going up has slowed. And he says because of that, it is down. So that's how you lie with statistics.
So this next story, Steve, is what I call this a Steve Palmer gift. From me to you.
I get to tee off on something.
Oh, dude, you're going to love this story. So you may have heard of this liberal think tank called the Aspen Institute.
Yep.
And it's partially funded by the U.S. government through various grants and a bunch of NGOs like Soros, people like that, whatever, the UN probably. Well, they came up with something that would probably make Joseph Goebbels and Joseph Stalin both, you know, probably be red-faced in how bold this is. And what has happened, the reason this hit the news, is they have created a commission within the Aspen Institute called the Commission on Information Disorder.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, here we go. This couldn't be more Orwellian. And what it is, it's basically a censorship promotional report that is coming out to identify and prioritize sources of what they consider bad information, you know, promoters or provocateurs. And they're going to recommend government plans, that they're going to recommend to the government plans that the government should enact both short-term and long-term to address, I'm sure, like Fox News, right? Okay. And for people that are on X or people that are on Facebook, like us. And what has happened, this is so beautiful. One of the members of the Aspen Institute is the former chess champion under the Soviet Union, Garry Kasparov.
Really?
Yes. He said, I'm frickin' out of here. He's resigning over this.
Good for him.
He said, this is exactly the kind of shit
that happened in the Soviets.
It's like, what are you people doing?
Yes.
What are you? You're going to have the government, you know, adjust the throttles of who can talk and who can't. And people like Katie Couric are on this thing and other nutballs that are
these de-platforming progressives people. Who know better about everything.
Yeah.
And they're holier than thou. Yeah. This is as dangerous as it gets.
This is as dangerous as it gets.
This is the content-based government regulation of speech and information.
Yeah.
And this is why our founders put it first. We have a First Amendment right. The government can pass no laws to impede your right of free speech.
Yeah.
And this is the most sinister part of the sinister law they could pass. Like, we're going to regulate the flow of information into our society because we know what's right and we know what's wrong. And we're going to tell you that, but we're not even going to tell you we're doing it. We're just going to do it and you'll never know the difference.
Yeah. So you have, like, in the Soviet Union.
This is Pravda.
Pravda, Izvestia. You have these agencies. And frankly, the West, you know, like for a while there, well, still, the BBC in England is awful. I mean, it's a government mouthpiece.
And what's the Canadian version? They've had all sorts of.
Yeah, probably. I don't know the name. But
and
yeah.
NPR. And
NPR.
Is starting if to get they some. Got, they're if, getting some flack.
Yeah, if they got their way. If NPR, well, basically the legacy media kind of is in lockstep with NPR, but that's a different reason.
Yeah.
Not being forced to, but just culturally aligned with the same thought process. But, I mean, when Garry Kasparov has to remind Americans about what America used to be and what the Soviet Union used to be and how we are drifting into that part of the, you know, the graph.
When the elites start thinking they can control all the levers of society.
Yeah.
And they're smarter than everybody else.
Yeah.
So they can decide what we get to hear, what we don't get to hear, what we get to do, what we don't get to do, how much we can pay our employees, how much we shouldn't pay our employees. When like, think about that for a second. Just give that a little bit of thought.
Well, one of the panelists on this commission, one of Katie Couric's fellow panelists, is some former congressional aide. And this lady wrote an article that says, the title of the article is "Deplatforming Works."
Oh my
God. I mean, this is, they're good like, grief. Like, we need to believe what they say because they're saying it.
Yeah.
You know, and
and they're tied in with the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, and all this other nonsense.
Thank these people God are Klaus is leaving.
Yeah. They're, these people are trying to engineer in a world economy to their vision.
I mean, Klaus, like the WEF, you know, Klaus said, well, we don't really need to go through the election process. We can have AI decipher what the majority thinks and who they would select.
Right. Just do it the easy way.
Just do it the, you know, what is wrong with these people? But
they're lunatics.
They're dehumanizing human life.
These are James Bond villains. That's what they are.
Yeah. They're things that we used to laugh at. Like, what if, you know, and you would write like crazy movie plots like James Bond. You would write like, you know, what would Smersh do if Smersh really existed? Or, you know, who was the guy that talked in his shoe?
Maxwell Smart.
Maxwell, like you would laugh at that stuff. And now it's like, New York City really is Gotham and we really do need Batman now, you know?
Yeah, it's scary stuff.
It's scary stuff. That's what I have, Steve.
All right. Well, good. We can wrap it up.
Yeah.
Look, Memorial Day weekend. What a great day. We talked a little bit about Memorial Day, but we should probably finish that up. You know,
yes.
It's like it is a time where you spend it with your family, you spend it with your friends.
Right.
Take a step back. Work on your car. Work on your lawn.
Right.
You know, that's like my version of Memorial Day. It's like go on your boat if that's what you like to do.
Right.
Hang out. Enjoy the weather if it's good. But remember. You know, remember why it is a Memorial Day, why it started as Decorator's Day or whatever it was, because at a time, a couple years after one of the greatest conflicts the American society has ever experienced, Civil War, there were graves freshly dug and freshly covered up that people were putting flowers on. And then ever since, we've had every other war that our heroes have died protecting the kind of freedoms that should prevent this nonsense by the Aspen Institute.
Yeah, well said. And
so,
you know, if you're church going, when you go to church, if the pastor or the priest or the rabbi doesn't say something, or the imam, you know, if you go to a mosque, if they don't say anything about Memorial Day, do a silent prayer.
Yeah, raise your hand. Well, this is Common Sense Ohio, May 24, 2024, brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting, where we are coming at you from Studio C at Channel 511 each and every week, right from the middle, at least until now.